I lived in a little ADU attached to a 3-bedroom house in a suburban area about a mile from town. It was always quiet, but there were a few families nearby, so I'd occasionally hear the kids playing soccer on the street. The family that owned the house was just a couple with a young daughter. It was my first Halloween there, and they had gone all out decorating the place with cobwebs, skeletons, and gravestones all over the lawn. The daughter was really into Halloween. I heard her laughing and playing around with the decorations in the really impressive costume her mom had custom made. The family was going to go trick-or-treating until 8 and then spend the night with some friends after a party. And they asked me if I could stay in their house and pass out candy. They got those oversized Twinkies and Kit Kats and didn't want to lose their reputation as the best house on the block every Halloween. I agreed and hung out in their living room, watching movies on their huge flat screen and messing around on my phone. Until 7, plenty of kids came to the door. It was actually fun seeing all the costumes. The parents in that neighborhood went all out. Eventually, the crowd died down, and nearly an hour had passed since anyone had come to the door. Just as I had nearly forgotten about the trick-or-treating, someone started to ring the doorbell a dozen times in a few seconds and pound on the door. I got up to check it out, and a kid's voice came from outside, screaming for help. Almost shrieking. I ran to the door and opened it, but the porch was empty by the time I got out there. I stood there for a bit, looking around and trying to calm down, and decided to go back inside, assuming it was a prank. Stuff like that happens on Halloween, so I shouldn't have been too concerned about it. For the next hour, I wasn't able to pay much attention to the movies. I was still worked up over what had happened. Even for a prank, that kid sounded so desperate that it was hard to believe that they were acting. Later, another sound came from the door. Not knocking, but somebody is messing with the handle. I'd made sure to lock it so they weren't able to get in. I looked through the people and saw a middle-aged guy with dead fish eyes staring straight back at me. Call me stupid all you want, but I decided to open the door for him. I thought he might be lost or need some help. Even though he looked off, I didn't want to ignore him. I opened the door a crack and asked him what he needed. He asked me if a boy had come by. I told him that a bunch of kids had been by, but I had a feeling it had something to do with the prank from earlier. He just stood there silently for a bit, looking past me and into the house, before shuffling off. I tried to let it go, but the guy seemed dangerous, so I locked up everything. Went back to my ADU to get some sleep. When I walked out of the main house, I heard things being moved around near my place. I ran over and found the door to my ADU open and heard banging as someone threw my stuff around. There was an axe near the firewood, so I grabbed it and snuck up. Through the window, I saw the man from earlier tearing apart my place. He kept shouting the name Jake and saying he knew that he was hiding there. He was practically frothing at the mouth and destroying all of my dishes and furniture. I burst in and yelled at him to get out, pointing the axe at him. The man immediately sprinted off, bailing through my back door and disappearing into the woods. While I called the police, I heard a kid crying from under my bed. He crawled out and I kept him company while the police came. The freak had been after that kid since he got separated from his parents. Who knows what he wanted to do with him, but luckily I got there in time. The guy was arrested nearly a week later. I don't know many of the details, but I do know that I got lucky that night. Jake and I both. I was 13 when it happened. Halloween. The night I learned that some strangers are more than just strange. At the time, my best friend Ryan invited two other friends and me over for a sleepover after some trick-or-treating. His neighborhood was perfect for trick-or-treating. A quiet cul-de-sac, with sidewalks lined with leaves and woods pressing up against the backyards. It just felt safe, as if small towns had a natural calming presence that cannot be explained, but palpably felt. We tore through the streets, laughing and racing from house to house in our costumes. Our plastic pumpkins sagged with candy by the end of the night. We had already begun discussing which pieces we'd trade back at Ryan's when we arrived at the last house on the street. The house was different from others. The shutters hung crooked, and the paint peeled down from the siding. The porch light flickered weakly, barely holding on for dear life. But the bowl by the door was empty, so Ryan decided we'd knock. A pause, then the door creaked open. A tall woman leaned out. Her hair tangled, her skin sallow, and the sour smell of smoke clinging to her clothes. She smiled, showing her yellowed teeth. "You kids shouldn't be out so late," she said softly, as if we had done something wrong. We shifted nervously at the sound of her voice. Something about it wasn't right. Ryan broke the silence, asking, "Do you have any candy? Do you have any candy?" She looked at us one by one, then stopped as she locked eyes with me. "You look familiar," she whispered, almost quietly enough to prevent my friends from hearing. Her lips trembled like she wanted to say more, but she bit her tongue, and then she disappeared inside. We stood there, frozen. She came back, carrying a shoebox, with a few melted chocolates, some loose buttons, and a grimy teddy bear keychain. "Take something," she urged us, holding it out as if we were supposed to trust her. "Keep it," she gestured. We paused. Ryan was the first to speak, vocalizing the hesitancy we all felt. "We're actually good, thanks." We shuffled down the steps, muttering about how creepy she was under our breaths. At least that was the end of it. The only thing was, it wasn't. Minutes later, when Ryan's mom pulled up to drive us home, the woman appeared again. This time, belligerent. She ran into the street, her face twisted, eyes wide. She rushed to our vehicle, pounding on the car hood with both fists, screaming at us.
"They took my child! They took her!"
Ryan's mom quickly locked the doors and shouted for us to stay down. Neighbors rushed out while this was happening, dragging the woman away, insisting she was just confused and that she wasn't dangerous. But her eyes remained locked on me as she clawed against their arms. I'll never forget those eyes. We couldn't wait any longer. We had to go. Ryan's mom floored the gas, tires squeaking as we sped away. Back at Ryan's, we tried to laugh it off. Crazy woman, right? We began trading candy before putting on a scary movie. The more we joked, the easier it was for me to believe it had just been a weird run-in and nothing more. The house was quiet by midnight, and Ryan's parents were asleep upstairs, so the four of us lay in our sleeping bags on the floor of his room. It was around 1 a.m. when the hallway light clicked on. It was glowing under the bedroom door. "Your parents?" I whispered just audibly enough for Ryan to hear. Ryan shook his head. His parents had gone to bed hours ago. There were no footsteps, and no door had opened after the light clicked on. Ryan cracked his door an inch. The hallway was empty, but the light burned. We were whispering about who could have turned it on when Dylan suddenly pointed. "Look." We looked through the big window that gave us a view of the backyard. There was a figure standing in the rain. I couldn't make it out at first, but the moment I did, my heart dropped. It was her. The woman who seemed to foam at the mouth at the sight of me. She didn't move in the rain. When she realized we had spotted her, she bolted into the darkness. Oh no, not good. Not good. We scrambled, locking every door and pushing a chair against the back one. We waited for her attempts to break in, but nothing happened. None of us could sleep after what we had just seen. Every creak of the house was a reminder that she might be inside. We sat up, wide-eyed and alert. By the time morning came, Ryan's mom had us sit at the kitchen table. We could hardly say a word and only played with our food. She looked pale too, with dark circles under her eyes. "I didn't want to scare you last night," she said slowly, as if she were processing what she was telling us as she said it. "But I woke up and I thought I saw somebody standing over my bed. it looked like a woman. When I blinked and rubbed my eyes, she was gone. And that's when the room fell silent. We told her nothing about the woman being outside the window. We couldn't. We were still paralyzed with fear, and we didn't want to confirm her account was real. We didn't have the heart to tell her. We barely ate our breakfast, going into the backyard when the meal ended. The grass was soaked from the rain. That's when we saw them. Muddy footprints leading straight to the back door. Ryan's dad unlocked it, and we all leaned in to see. The prints continued inside, pressed into the tile. One step, two, three. Then they stopped in the middle of the hallway, with no smears leading away, and no trail back outside. Just three perfect footprints, ending. It was as if she had vanished into thin air. And then I thought, what if she's still out there? What if she still wants me? Halloween storms always carry extra intensity, as if they somehow match the mood of that day in the year. I remember how powerful the thunder was, the windows rattling and the lights flickering. Even modern conveniences yield to nature, I guess. That night, however, had more to do with the supernatural than anything else. I still get goosebumps when I think about it. My parents were at a party the year this happened, so I decided to have three friends over while they were gone. Liam, Sophie, and Josh. We didn't feel like going trick-or-treating that night, so we ended up in the basement playing a dusty old board game. It's kind of funny how we found ourselves playing it despite my uncle's warnings. My uncle joked to me once, saying,
"Never touch that board, or you'll be cursed."
But there we were, disregarding his advice. I thought my uncle was just pulling my leg, so I figured we were safe to play it. We sat around a folding table, lit a few candles because the power was malfunctioning, and put the little pointer at the center of the board. The game was new to all of us. Liam was brave enough to get us started. "Is anyone there?" He spoke dramatically, as if to imply that the task of questioning the board was frightening. The pointer scraped slowly to yes. We laughed out loud. Sophie quipped playfully, "Nice try, Josh," she said. We assumed he was the one who moved the pointer. It seemed as though silly questions rolled right off our tongues. Will I fail math? Will Sophie marry a rock star? The responses from the pointer on the board made us crack up even harder. I almost forgot the storm outside by this point. The water dripping from the basement ceiling into a rusty pan below didn't even faze me. Then, something strange happened. Without anyone asking, the pointer shifted again. This time on its own, it landed on the two words. Behind you. Our laughter was cut short. How did that? Josh turned quickly when the pointer landed, expecting something or someone to be there. All he saw was the furnace looming in the shadows. I couldn't believe it. I knew I saw the pointer move to those words, but there wasn't any logical explanation for it. "Okay, which one of you?" I started. Before I could finish, though, we all heard a heavy thunk rattle through the pipes overhead. Nobody moved a muscle. We all made eye contact, and then Liam suggested, "Wind." It wasn't convincing, his voice cracking from the uncertainty in his belief. "Old house, right?" Then another noise. This time it was lighter, like a shoe scuffing the concrete. What was that? Sophie was the next to speak. "But basements don't have wind," she said it intensely, but quietly, as if to get our attention without disturbing someone in the next room. I grabbed the flashlight cautiously, its beam shaky, and surveyed the room, boxes, shelves, and the furnace. Nothing out of the ordinary. "Let's just pack it up," John suggested. "Wait," I said. I had to know. One more question. I placed my finger on the pointer, and that's when I asked the board, Who are you? It moved instantly, without hesitation. This can't be good. Stay. Suddenly, the candle flames bent sideways, as if someone had breathed on them to put them out. A chilling draft cut through the room, goosebumps forming on my arms. We're done, Sophie snapped, standing up as she tried to grab the board. But before she could, we noticed something in the corner of the room that stirred. It appeared darker, like it was just another space in the room, only this was pitch black. And then that darkness shifted, lifting, stretching, and a shape began to take form. It was taller than any of us, and its head scraped the low beams. The others didn't get a clear look at it, but I did. The outline. It had a face, pale and featureless, like chalk. I felt my chest drop. Then the flashlight flickered out. No, no, no. I should have listened to my uncle. Whatever it was alone with us in the dark. I heard a whisper. It was Liam, petrified, saying, "Run." We bolted to the stairs, heavy steps striking the concrete behind us. I knew the figure was gaining on us, but I couldn't force myself to look back. John shoved Sophie up the stairs ahead of him, and I was the last one to make it to the ground level. I slammed the basement door. At first, I was surprised by silence. Then the knob twisted. I immediately grabbed it tightly before the door could fully open, as my heart pounded like it would break free from its cage. The figure we saw yanked the door harder than any human hand should. Just when I thought the door would give away, there was silence. I didn't hesitate any longer. I signaled to Sophie to grab the phone in the kitchen. She dialed 911 frantically, informing the operator of what we had just witnessed. My friends huddled in fear as I kept a hand on the doorknob at all times. Minutes later, a police officer arrived, and as if on cue, the power miraculously came back on. We felt dread as the police officer stepped down into the basement, the place from which we had just narrowly escaped. He flicked on the light and began rummaging through the boxes and shelves, peering at the furniture. Nothing out of the ordinary so far. No one was there, at least not anymore. There were no other footprints either. The dusty floor hadn't picked up a trace of other footsteps except for our scramble to the door. The police officer concluded the premises were clear of any other presence, his tone condescending. He looked at us as if he didn't believe our account, but didn't have the audacity to call us liars. After the police officer established we were safe, we dragged out the game to the trash, recovering our wits as best as we could. We didn't say much. It wasn't long before their parents arrived to pick them up. I had to wait in that house alone. My parents were still out, and by this time, the storm had died. The candles had burned out, and the basement door was still closed. That night was hard to sleep. Whatever I saw might still be there. I didn't tell my parents yet, but I decided the next morning I would prove to myself that it was nothing. As the sunrise illuminated the valley, I looked for the game in the trash. The only problem was, it wasn't there. I couldn't find it anywhere. I looked and looked. I finally found it. Back on the table, in the basement, with the pointer in the center. How did it? Before I could answer that thought, I saw a single word spelt out on the board. I still get shivers. All it said was, "Stay." Before my first year of college, my parents kept telling me, "Never go to the farmhouse." That was a title given to the old party house on a big plot of land a few miles from campus. Of course, their warning just made me want to go even more. In my first few weeks, I learned the house had been abandoned for nearly a decade. Yet, according to some of the upperclassmen, the legend persisted. It had become a rite of passage to leave a mark on the farmhouse. I had a plan in my own, a variation on the Mile High Club. It was a nasty, stupid idea, but the older students said it would cement my legacy. As luck would have it, I started talking to this one girl in late October. She was a year above me, and I'd been trying to impress her for weeks. I told her some of my friends in my grade and I were planning to explore the farmhouse on the night of Halloween, then hit up some parties after the adrenaline rush. Surprisingly, she agreed to come. She even scored us drinks. We pre-gamed, and then we finally headed to the farmhouse. It was about a 15-minute drive out of town, down a shitty two-lane road most of the way. When we reached the address, I turned onto a dirt driveway at a closed gate, but the chain locking it in place was broken. We rolled in, closing the gate behind us, then made our way through the barren field in front of the house. We went silent as the farmhouse came into view. The place was caked in graffiti and barely standing. It wasn't much bigger than a double-wide trailer home either, which made it seem more like a drug den than a party house. When I shut off my car and took away the headlights, the house disappeared altogether. Stepping out of the car, we grabbed our flashlights and made our way inside with ease. The floorboards felt like they were about to give out, but we kept going. The walls had been stripped down to the studs, the wires, and plumbing gutted. Needless pipes and other garbage littered the floor, but that was it. We felt like we were alone that night, but only until we heard that noise. It groaned from across the house, the sound of pressure. Somewhere inside the room, at the end of the hall, weight had shifted. My two friends froze and looked at me. I looked at the girl I was with, trying to appear unfazed. I wanted to impress her so badly that I told everyone to stay put while I went to investigate. I crept down the hall, glancing left and right into the rooms I passed, until I reached the closed door at the end of the hall. Slowly, I pushed the door open and found more nothing. I stepped in for a closer look, stopping in the center. I could feel that I was in that room where the craziest things happened, but the floor there was the cleanest in the entire house. Suddenly, the door slammed shut behind me. My heart jumped out of my throat, and I turned around. Standing in front of the door was the girl. She walked toward me in the beam of my flashlight as she turned off her own, telling me my other friends had gotten scared and ran outside. They left her alone, so she came to find me. I asked her then if we were alone, and she nodded. She looked scared, so I took the light off her face and hugged her. I wanted to comfort her, but where her hands moved after hugging me back for a few seconds changed the mood entirely. I was thrilled and ready to roll. I put my hands on her in return, then she lifted her head up, leaning in for a kiss. I closed my eyes and kissed her, feeling like I'd pulled off the impossible. Then, through my eyelids, I sensed a flash of light. I instinctively opened my eyes an instant later and saw it again. Behind the girl, floating in darkness for a split second, a camera flash. I jumped out of my skin. I lost my composure and dropped my flashlight before I grabbed the girl and started to run out of there. She asked me what I was doing, but I knew there was no time to explain. By sheer luck, I managed to find the way out, and we jumped into my car. There, I almost screamed. I could feel the presence of people behind me, in my car. But when I looked in the back seat, it was just my friends. They seemed almost as scared as I was, but I didn't ask them what happened. I just drove. Once we got back to town, it was clear that the night was shot, so I dropped everyone off and went home. In the days that followed, I tried to get the guys' end of the story. They only gave me vague answers about going off to investigate some other noise, but I could tell they were hiding something.
I didn't say everything that happened to me either. I felt like I had dipped my toe into some weird, freaky shit by going into the farmhouse, and I just wanted to forget about it. However, a few days later, I received a DM on Instagram from an account with zero followers and only one post. It was a picture of me in the dark master bedroom of the farmhouse. My eyes were wide open, staring red at the flash, while my hands were all over that girl. Suddenly, it felt like my life was collapsing. Her face wasn't visible, but I was terrified someone would find out who she was and use it to blackmail me somehow. My worst fear was that the account would go viral. With that in mind, I simply blocked the account, told nobody about it, and lost contact with everyone involved that night, praying it would all just go away. Only now, years later, do I feel safe enough to talk about this. I have no clue who else was in that house, or who posted the photo. I still don't know what happened to my friends. I certainly don't trust that girl. All I know is I wish I'd listened to my parents when they told me not to go in that godforsaken farmhouse.